Welcome to the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. Saturday evening, November 14th, 2009, inching ever so closer to Thanksgiving. I guess we're still allowed to celebrate Thanksgiving in America, right, gang? Welcome back to the show. Second hour this evening. I'm your host. We're coming to you live, of course, from AM 1380 WLRN Studios in Memphis, Tennessee, going out to our AM FM affiliates on the Liberty News Radio Network, and you could even be listening to us tonight on the Internet at thepoliticalcesspool.org. That's our official Internet headquarters, or libertynewsradio.com. Maybe on satellite or the Liberty News Wire, however you're tuned into the program tonight, we thank you for joining us. Another live installment of the award-winning Political Cesspool radio program. Great first hour tonight, and I mean great. I thought it was just rock solid with Keith Alexander. What a gem, what a treasure for this program to have men like him on this staff. We covered a couple of contemporary pop culture topics with a political tinge, of course. They involved two football teams, no less, that Keith Alexander saw in action today, Tennessee Volunteers versus Ole Miss Rebels. If you missed the first hour, perhaps you're just now tuning in, we made hay with a couple of issues that are surrounding those two teams before moving on to an issue. Two beneficiaries of political correctness are converging against one another, and it involves a story right out of the NFL, and we covered that ground and more. As Keith said tonight, we didn't talk about much, but we sure plowed the ground well, and now we've got much more to talk about, however, on a busy night in the political cesspool as we continue on. I believe I am now joined by yet another member of the political cesspool all-star stable of talent, Winston Smith, in the house tonight. Winston, how are you?
I am so doggone well, James. It's good to talk with you again. We had a good lunch today, and, of course, Keith Alexander was out doing reconnaissance work at the football game, so he couldn't join us at lunch. I wish he had been there, but still, anytime I get to hear the political cesspool's intellectual great white shark over the air, well, that's just well fed as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and Winston isn't kidding. We really did have lunch today at a nice little catfish restaurant here in Memphis. It was me and Winston and one of Winston's children and Eddie the Bombardier Miller. Bill Rowland was working, and, of course, Keith was down at the football game, or else we would have had a full complement of the hosting staff there enjoying the catfish baskets, the bottomless baskets. We had the all-you-can-eat stuff. That's our kind of business. But it truly was a great lunch, Winston. Any time we can spend fellowship with one another outside of the radio station or even inside the station, however we do it, it's always joyous. And I tell you, we're like a band of brothers. The bands of brotherhood are so strong amongst the people here that host this program. I love you all very much, and I tell you, it's always great, and I had a great time today. And now here we are on the show having just as much fun now, minus the catfish.
I wish our listeners could enjoy fellowship equal to that which we enjoy. Folks, James is not kidding when he describes the camaraderie between the cesspool staff. It's something that I wish you could all experience. And you know, you can. You just seek out people who think like you and who look like you, especially. And you enjoy each other's company. You share each other's experiences, and you get involved in each other's lives, and it becomes a very precious thing. That's something that that we white people really need to cultivate.
Well, it is, and I think especially when you go through battles with one another, I think that's why the camaraderie amongst people in military outfits, and obviously I can't necessarily liken the experience we've had, the battles that we've had, the political battles, and the battles with the media that we've shared with one another. Obviously that can't compare to the physical battles that soldiers have to go through, but to an extent there are some similarities, and because we have shared those scars together, we're that much closer, and it makes our fellowship that much more enriching. But anyway, enough back padding. We've got business to tend to tonight. Winston, did you catch the first hour on your drive out to the station tonight?
I caught a good bit of it, but then I had to go and enjoy our Thanksgiving dinner because I'm going to be away during Thanksgiving. So the Smith family decided to enjoy our Thanksgiving dinner a little bit early while I'm around, and it was just as joyous and just as thankful and just as festive as it would be had we celebrated it on the usual date, more traditional date.
Of course, I tell you, Yeah, I couldn't even think about eating again as much as we ate this afternoon. You've been putting away some food today, buddy. If you had Thanksgiving dinner tonight after that all-you-can-eat catfish, my God.
Well, you got to be durable.
You did some damage, I tell you. Wow. I'm impressed. Yeah, I knew you were going to have that Thanksgiving dinner tonight before the show. Oh, it's making me sweat just thinking about it. But anyway, one of the things we were talking about, obviously, during that first hour was the fact that this Kansas City Chiefs running back is being, essentially thrown out of the league for making, I guess, what the media would call, quote-unquote, homophobic remarks. Well, from the NFL all the way down to airport novelty shops, they're going to seek you out and they're going to get you. And they will continue to do that, ladies and gentlemen, until you start standing up for yourself. They'll take us off one by one until we're all gone. I mean, you got to start standing with the programs and the organizations that are fighting for you and then solidifying and standing together with people who the cultural Marxists try to make examples out of, defend them, protest for them, rally for them, insist that they get their jobs back. Could you imagine if you say a black person was fired for no good reason, what happened? Well, we know what happens. We see it every day. Now, I got a story here. It's not what's coming to America. It's already here. A store fires a man for saying he opposes gay marriage. This is an interesting story. It's on our blog at thepoliticalcesspool.org. You know the Brookstone stores. You see them in the airport terminals. I travel a lot. Brookstone store. And a Massachusetts airport has fired a worker because a co-worker approached him four times this co-worker approached him to talk about her upcoming lesbian wedding. Now, eventually, after the fourth time, at first he just said, oh, congratulations. She kept on prodding for him to say something about it, something, you know, that she didn't like. He eventually told her very politely that he just thought it was immoral. And he said that she was clearly trying to goad him into expressing his moral beliefs. And when she did, she replied, human resources, buddy, you better keep your opinion to himself or to yourself. And a few days later, human resources did, in fact, fire him for harassment. Can you get that? And imposing his belief on others. We got this on our blog at thepoliticalcesspool.org. The original story came from WorldNet. See, Winston... Winston, this is the day and age in which we live in.
James, I hate to say this, but we had some technical problems while you were talking about that subject, so I didn't hear any of it.
Well, hopefully the audience did. Who knows for sure? But nevertheless, quick recap, Brookstone employee goaded by a plant four times. She asked him what he thought of her lesbian wedding. He eventually just said, quite politely, but matter-of-factly, that he thought it was immoral. He ends up getting fired for harassment and imposing his beliefs on others.
I followed that story with the usual cesspoolian interest because that's one of the things that we keep an eye on. But that is just indicative, as you said, of the times in which we live. He didn't even bring up the subject. And when he was asked for his opinion, what was he to say? What was he to do? Was he to say, I have no opinion on that? And had he done that, I can assure you that the young lady would have interpreted that in the same way as she interpreted his explicit remarks. I think I saw a documentary not long ago of some college professors, and this one woman said that she went into her classes to teach, and she didn't spend the first 15 minutes talking about politics like the Marxist professors did. And because of that, her students pegged her correctly as a conservative. And she asked, but I've never mentioned politics in my class. And they said, well, that's how we know you're a conservative. You didn't talk about politics in class.
You didn't force-feed us.
And when you're a conservative trying to stand up for traditional morality, it's a classical damned if you do, damned if you don't. If you express your opinions explicitly, they're going to nail you. And if you don't, well, that's going to be interpreted as hate speech nonetheless.
Well, and the reason that they're able to do this is because we don't stand together like the left does. And we'll allow this guy to be fired, and we're like, well, Yeah, man, well, that's tough. But, you know, at the same time, I got to go to work tomorrow, so I can't worry about it, you know. And they're going to continue to be able to do this. Example after example will continue to be made until people either, one, as we talked about in the first segment or in the first hour, they're going to lie and just say they believe in it, or perhaps they'll eventually just adopt it as their own philosophy. But nevertheless, our people, and this is the point, guys, come on, we have got to start standing behind our people. You know, we got to begin whining and you know, I don't want to say be hysterical and as crazy and loony as the left. We've got to start doing more to show support. We can't allow this kind of action to stand. We've got to rally. We've got to protest. We've got to do sit-ins. We've got to take a break. We'll be back right after this.
Don't go away. There's more Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages. Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, we're red hot and rolling. We're live, unrehearsed, and uncensored. We're the political cesspool, and I'm James Edwards, joined by my second co-host of the night, Winston Smith, filling in the chair that Keith Alexander vacated after the first hour. Bill Rowland and Eddie the Bombardier Miller have tonight off. And in the last segment, we were talking about the fired Brookstone employee who, after four attempts, finally spoke the truth and spoke his mind and said he was against, you know, he didn't think it was moral for two lesbians to be married, and he ended up getting fired. And what I said before the break was, we have got to, with the same fervor that the left exudes, we have got to rally. We got to protest. We got to march around these Brookstone stores. People should be doing that up there in Massachusetts, in front of the store, you know, a human chain, all of this stuff that the left does. You know, Keith Alexander's right. We got to mimic the tactics of the left. Those tactics are successful. Now, you're probably saying, well, you know, theoretically, that's a good idea, but practically speaking, I don't know if it would work. You know, what do you know? How do you know it would work? Well, I know it works because we've done it. You know, in fact, back in 2006, it was the spring of 2006, that's how the political cesspool it was in 2005. That's how the political cesspool got its first claim to fame before we were the media sensation we are now. We were doing these things. Al Sharpton came to town, and it's been much talked about on this show over the years. That's how we got our start. Al Sharpton came to town. He wanted to denigrate our Confederate parks. He wanted to spit on the grave of Nathan Bedford Forrest. We rallied. We used this program as our bully pulpit. We got hundreds of people together, and we stopped it, and we won. So not only do I know, theoretically speaking, it can work, I put that theory to practice, and we executed a game plan. We fought. And we were successful. So I know it works because I've lived it and I've organized it, and that's what this show does. So, Winston, I know you wanted to add to that.
James, you are absolutely correct in that. What you're talking about.
I think we lost Winston again.
I think we have some technical problems. Am I being heard now?
Yeah, I hear you, buddy.
Okay. James, what you were talking about, you've pretty much diagnosed the problem that has besieged, the malady that has besieged not just traditional Americans, but also white people in particular, and that is we are so good at diagnosing the problem. You know, no one is better than us at seeing what the issue is, and we pride ourselves on being able to say things like, if the races were reversed, or if the sexual preference was reversed, we know what would happen. But you're right. We need to take on those tactics, and we need to contact Brookstone and tell them that we will not be patronizing their stores until they clarify their policy. And James, I don't mind if they don't want people talking about traditional marriage and things like that at the workplace. It's a workplace. It is not appropriate workplace conversation. But then neither is the subject of lesbians getting married. That is not appropriate workplace conversation. So if in the workplace we can't talk about traditional marriage because it offends gamosexuals, and if in the workplace we can't talk about the virtue of being straight because queers get offended by that, then they shouldn't be allowed to talk about how great it is to engage in their activities. They shouldn't be allowed to talk about their political leanings and how they plan on forcing people to accept them. It is not appropriate workplace conversation. And the problem was not with what this fired employee said. The problem was that the issue was allowed to come up anyhow. And those of you out there in the workplace, whenever those issues come up, you need to report those instances as infractions of workplace conversation, because you're not allowed to talk about them. You're not allowed to defend your position, and they shouldn't be allowed to bring it up, because this is what happens. It was allowed to come up, and the guy who was pretty much tricked into offering his opinion, now he got canned. Well, I guess we lost James. I was waiting for James to come back on, but folks, what James was saying is absolutely correct. We have to start taking action to defend ourselves. We have to start taking action to defend those who are suffering for what they believe, because they believe as we do. The days of the left and the days of the cultural Marxists being able to get away with perpetrating things like these have to come to an end, and the only way they're going to come to an end is when we decide to take on their tactics and give them a taste of their own medicine.
Winston, I'm back. We're just having too much fun at WLRM tonight. I tell you, this is
maybe another snake got in the transmitter.
Yeah, but I'm back here, guys. We're back at full strength again. We're kind of like a hockey team tonight. One of us keeps going into the penalty box, but we're back now. And no, you're right. So we got to stand up. We've still got a big percentage of the political pie out there. When I'm talking about European Americans with traditional conservative beliefs, and I mean paleo conservative beliefs, not this phony baloney neocon philosophy that passes as conservatism or modern conservatism today. Talking about people that fundamentally agree with the mission statement of the political cesspool, which you can read by going to our website. I still think, out of all of the groups out there and all of the different, competing ideologies, we still have a bigger portion of the American political pie than any other group, but yet we're continued to be defeated because, listen, I bet you there were less than a dozen emails that were sent to Brookstone as a result of this man being fired. And that's because our people just don't do that kind of stuff. And it's a hindrance, and it's something that we've got to rectify, something that we've got to change and correct. The left would do it. That's why one of the reasons they are successful. There's many reasons. There's no one reason that we've lost so much and they've won so much. It's a cornucopia. But this is one thing that we can do, and we know that it works because we practice it here. I mean, if you can back down Al Sharpton and the media juggernaut that he brings anytime he goes to do his little race hustle, and you can beat back some of these human resources departments. You can do some things, and this is what we need to do. And I guess we've probably spent too much time on it already. But Winston, we have got to continue with this radio program and the other less than a handful of organizations out there that are providing. This is what makes this show so unique, I think, is that unlike so many organizations out there that claim to fight for America First values and traditional paleo conservatism, we actually provide results. We've actually proven ourselves on the battlefield, and there's not many organizations that can do that. And we continue to see our people being sniped. The snipers are taking them out one by one. And another casualty, it would appear, would be, I guess for lack of a better term, perhaps our television counterpart, Lou Dobbs' voice has been silenced this week. And we were talking about that at lunch today, too, Winston.
Yes, it seems that, we have the official reason as to why he's leaving, but we also know what the real reason was. And, folks, never let that escape your notice. There is always the official explanation, and then there is the real explanation. That's the real explanation that you need to get to. You have to look way, way behind the official statements to get at the reality. But as they used to say, the truth is there. And the fact is that Lou Dobbs was run off of TV by a bunch of conniving Jews who were in charge of media who didn't like what he was saying. He was run off because his views on illegal immigration and illegal aliens in this country are unpopular, as right as they are. And I'm not defending Lou Dobbs per se, because I don't really trust anybody who's any conservative commentator who's on television today. But still, the fact remains is that this voice has been silenced because of a bunch of foreigners.
Hang on. We got to go to break again. We'll be back right after this. We're going to talk more about Lou Dobbs.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll free at 1-866-986-6397.
I just can't wait for Jersey Boys to come to the Orpheum here in Memphis a little later on. I believe that's in January. I am going to be there. That's my Christmas present, everybody. So come on out and see a good show with me. But welcome back to another good show, the Political Cesspool radio program. I want to say something about what Winston was saying in the previous segment as we continue our commentary on the, well, I don't know if it was a resignation or a dismissal from CNN. Lou Dobbs is no longer on the air. And it happened rather abruptly. He was with them since 1980. He was one of the original anchors with CNN, had been with them for 29 years, and then he ends his show on a day's notice. I don't know, that sounds a little suspect. But what Winston was saying in the previous segment, he said that the Jews had been putting some pressure on Lou Dobbs. Now, people who are tuning into this program, perhaps for the first time, we have new listeners tuning in every week. People who agree with us and people who don't like us so much. But nevertheless, the show continues to grow. And they might say, well, that's an anti-Semitic statement to say that Jews ran Lou Dobbs off the air. But the fact of the matter remains that that's no more anti-Semitic than saying that the Political Cesspool is hosted by a bunch of white guys. You know, it's just a matter of fact. CNN, their president is Joe Klein, who happens to be Jewish. The Southern Poverty Law Center, who had been doggedly attacking Lou Dobbs for months, are run by a plethora of Jewish folks, including their president, Richard Cohen. So it's just a matter of fact, and we say things quite frankly here on this radio program, but that is the case. But there's another thing about Lou Dobbs that I believe is pretty interesting, Winston, and I want to chase this rabbit for a moment. People probably, I mean, you know, not many people would know that Lou Dobbs's house was fired upon within the last few days. Got a story here. His house was shot up the other day while he and his wife were standing nearby. Journalist Lou Dobbs, the story reads, says gunshots were fired at his New Jersey home after a series of threatening phone calls to his residence. The CNN host of the Lou Dobbs Show told listeners on his nationally syndicated radio program that he believes the incident is related to his outspoken views on immigration. They've created an atmosphere, and they've been unrelenting in their propaganda, Dobbs said, in reference to pro-immigration groups. It was three weeks ago, a shot was fired at my house where I live. My wife and I were standing outside, and for weeks and weeks there have been a series of threatening phone calls. Now, Winston, ask you this rhetorical question. First of all, again, I don't know if everyone in our listening audience was aware of that, and our listening audience is obviously much more astute than the average bear. How many people in America do you think would know about it if people shot at Jesse Jackson's house? How many people do you think might have heard about that?
Oh, that would have been front and center news for weeks. We'd still be talking about it if it happened months ago. It would result in a national soul searching over a race, and we'd be treated to a practically unending parade of Negro race hustlers wondering why white people just can't get over race, and they would have no proof whatsoever that it was a white person doing it. Just like we have no proof of the race of whoever was who shot at Lou Dobbs' house. But the fact is that somebody took violent action against Lou Dobbs and put him and his wife in harm's way. This is what the left has come to, folks. And for all of their
Well, the left is always, you know. I don't mean to interrupt, but I'm getting pretty animated about this because we've gone through this before here on this program. We've been the subject. We have been the, I shouldn't say the subject, but the victims of such threats against our radio station and against our homes and against our persons here as the host of this program over the years. And you see Lou Dobbs going after this. The stigma always is, though, that conservatives are the violent type. Conservatives are the ones that break the law, when it is inevitably and 100% always the fact that liberals are the ones who advocate violence. Liberals are the ones who threaten violence. Liberals are the ones who carry out violence. And when it happens, it is never reported. And when the victim of such threats and such attacks happen to be conservatives like Lou Dobbs, you almost never hear about it. And you wouldn't hear about it if it wasn't for shows like this. And where is the action? Where is the media outcry against this intolerance? They're threatening violence because they don't like his stand on immigration. You don't hear about it. It doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. And again, had the roles been reversed, it would have been news for, as you said, Winston, months and months and months and months.
Until we found out that it was actually a hoax, you know?
Well, that would have been the case had it been the other way around. And you know, that's interesting, too. Not only do whites or conservatives never engage or hardly ever engage, I mean, again, there's no universal truth when it comes to something like this. There's, you know, the rule, and then there are the rare exceptions, but almost never do our people, or people who share our conservative tenets or constitutional philosophies, engage in such acts. And in fact, we engage in them so rarely that when something does pop up in the media, it almost always turns out to be a hoax, and we've seen that time and time again over the course of the last few years alone. But yeah, Lou Dobbs, I'll tell you, you know, I don't know if it's a combination of the pressure he's been getting from these groups, these Jewish groups like the FCLC and CNN itself, they've told him a few times to tone it down, to quit talking about immigration. I don't know if it's a combination of that and the fact that he's now, you know, the victim of well, I mean, you know, when you're shooting at somebody's house while they're standing outside, it doesn't get much more serious than that. I don't know if it's a combination of both or one weighed more heavily on him than the other, but the fact that a man had been on air for 29 years, had been one of the founding anchors of CNN when it came on the air back in 1980, and then announces his resignation effective immediately, something's going on there. And there's something there that's more than meets the eye.
Yes, this is one of those instances where you can definitely and accurately say, I smell a rat.
Well, we smell it. And, you know, I didn't get all gooey over Lou Dobbs. I mean, and I'm not going to sit here and, you know, cry crocodile tears in my soup for the next week, but, you know, he was better than anybody else on television, certainly a lot better than Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly. Of course, I think they're among the worst. But, you know, you hate to see people like that go through things like this, and we've had that happen. I mean, this show, for instance, again, to bring up our own experiences, and we like to do that from time to time because, you know, I think we have the authority to do that. But as this show has continued to grow, and we've received interest from CNN, and, you know, Fox News and the New York Times and the L.A. Times and the London Times, and Winston obviously interviewed with Newsweek earlier this summer. You know, we've received such mainstream credentials because we tell the truth as we know it, and we try to tell the truth in love, and we take a unique viewpoint on the issues, and we don't back down, and this show has been quite successful. And as we've continued to accumulate fans, we have continued to accumulate people who don't like us so much, and inevitably, when you reach that level of celebrity or success, we'll receive death threats from time to time. And I can remember, you know, myself, I guess it was last year, last summer sometime, shortly before, you know, the show really took off into syndication, that we had received a pretty detailed death threat. And I can remember calling the FBI, and he called them several times and told them what was going on. It took them 3 weeks to get back to me. I ended up just calling and filing a report with the local police, just in case the threat was carried out, maybe somebody would try to figure out what happened there. But, you know, it just wasn't, it obviously wasn't a priority, Winston, and, you know, I don't know why it wasn't. It seems like a death threat that, when I'm not going to go into the details of it, but this is the double standard that we have to put up with. I tell you, had I been, you know, whomever, J.C. Watts, for instance, I guess it would have been a different ball game altogether, but these are the things we have to put up with. And again, the moral of the story is this is what the left does. I mean, you know, that conference we put on last November, they were going to, you know, bust a hotel and everything else. And You know, nothing. No, less than nothing. Not a peep out of the media. They knew. They knew what was going on. But, well, I guess we ought to talk about Christmas now. The only other, the only other entity out there in more danger than Lou Dobbs is Christmas itself. It's the recipient of unyielding and relentless attacks. And, Winston, I know, and we probably don't have time to get to it in this segment, but coming back, we're going to let you offer a soliloquy on the war against Christmas. We had a the opening salvo of that was launched last week. I was talking about the 2009 Christmas culture war began in earnest in Amelia, Ohio last week. I couldn't imagine any resident of a place like Amelia, Ohio, having a problem with a Christmas parade, but yet Christmas parades in Amelia are now outlawed. And we're going to be talking about it. We're going to continue to talk about this issue all the way through the Christmas season. And notice I didn't say holiday, and please don't call it the holiday season, ladies and gentlemen. Use the word Christmas. It's not a dirty word. I don't care what they say on TV. And we're going to talk about it a lot. We're going to continue to bring you examples, both contemporary and longstanding. And Winston's got something good coming up for you, and we wanted to give him the opportunity. Well, you've prepared what, Winston, a little report on it or what? What have you done?
Well, I had written an essay for publication in the Political Cesspool's upcoming print media venture, and I gave
France
you a
little now, ladies and gentlemen. You hadn't seen nothing yet.
Say that again?
I said we're branching out, ladies and gentlemen. You ain't seen nothing yet. We're not content. Radio can't contain us anymore. We're going into print. But hang on. Hear music.
Don't go away. Political Cesspool guys, we'll be back right after these messages.
We'll return.
Jump in the Political Cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the time warp that is the Political Cesspool radio program. I don't know how 3 hours can go by so quickly. We still got an hour left in the show tonight, don't get me wrong, but I can't believe I've already been on the air tonight with you for about an hour and 50 minutes. We're bobbing around, we're shucking and jiving, and we're covering different issues, and now we're talking about the war on Christmas. But I want to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, if you appreciate us half as much as we appreciate you, and we love each and every one of you in our listening audience, don't forget that we are listener-supported. You can support us and help ensure that this program continues its good work long into the future. We're already 5 years now into our sixth year on broadcast radio, as you well know, but make a donation and help keep this show strong and sure. You can do it at thepoliticalcesspool.org. War on Christmas, Winston, you've written an essay. I want you to share it with us.
Well, I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's quite lengthy, but I can give you little bits and pieces of it, and since we only have 10 minutes left. But just keep an eye out for the Political Cesspool's print media coming out, folks, and maybe you'll get to see the entire essay for yourself. But James,
if we can get it off the ground, which is always you never know with us.
Yeah, that's true. But James, there's a yearly battle against Christmas, a war against Christmas, and we all know that there's a war against Christmas because there's a war against white people. I mean, Christianity is the white man's religion, and Christmas being the centerpiece of Christianity, naturally, you destroy Christmas, you go a long way towards destroying Christianity. But this yearly war over Christmas, it tells us a lot of things, James, but it reveals mainly the hypocrisy of the cultural Marxists, the leftists, and other Christ-haters and white-hating bigots. Now, these people claim that the public Christmas displays violate this non-existent constitutional separation of church and state. And by the way, folks, there is no such thing as a constitutional separation of church and state. The idea was broached by Thomas Jefferson in a private letter to somebody in the Danbury Baptist Convention. It was never in the Constitution. And anytime you hear someone bring up the constitutional separation of church and state, challenge them to point it out. Carry around a little pocket copy of the Constitution with you, and give it to them, and don't let them get away with saying
the Constitution says that Congress shall establish no religion. Look, the early colonists, all the colonies had state religions. So that is not the idea that government should not support religion is bogus. Anyhow, these people claim that the Christmas displays violate this separation of church and state. But, folks, which of the founders ever expressed objections to Christmas? When did they ever express or write anything saying that Christmas was not a legitimate American holiday? That's something that the government should not support. Now, these are the people who wrote and developed the Constitution, and not one of them objected to public Christmas. Now, if the founders saw no constitutional conflict, then, folks, why should we listen to the objections of people who claim there is a conflict? I mean, questions about the Constitution, I'll take the word of the white Christian men who produced it over the likes of Morris Dees, Mark Potok, Heidi Beirich, and the swindlers at the ADL. I'll take the word of the white Christian men over those people anytime. Furthermore, we should protest vehemently any displays of menorahs. The complaints about Christmas come primarily from Jews. That is, from Christ haters. Make no mistake about it, my friends. Jews hate Christ. They hate the Christian religion because they hate the Christ of the Christian religion. And if Jews are going to continue to claim victimhood, as they do, over the historical burdens that they bore, i.e. World War II and concentration camps, then we Christians should remind them that tens of thousands of Christian men died in the effort to liberate Jews from those concentration camps. Now, many white men entered World War II out of a sense of Christian obligation. They felt it was their Christian obligation to defend the country. And that means that these men who liberated these Jews from the concentration camps, they were led to do so by a Christian impulse. And now Jews are trying to outlaw the practice of the religion that freed them from the concentration camps. Now, those Christian men didn't free Jews so that Jews could outlaw Christianity. We, folks, you and I, we are the children and the grandchildren of World War II survivors. And a lot of us lost fathers and grandfathers in World War II. And they fought to save Jews. And now, the people who were rescued at the price of white Christian blood are determined to effect the criminalization of Christianity. Now, my friends, do you want to study a time in history when a gang of thugs said that a group of people had no right to publicly practice their religion? Do you want to learn about a time when a gang of thugs seized control of a government and outlawed the display of particular religious symbols, the symbols of a particular religion? Then start studying, because you're living in that time. Folks, we still have, as far as I'm concerned, we still haven't received an adequate explanation as to why a huge menorah was allowed on the grounds of the White House.
When during the same year, and this was under the Bush administration, the manger scenes were completely, you know, they were completely gone. I mean, they were removed.
Exactly. But anywhere you see crosses being removed or nativity scenes being torn down at Christmas time, look around. You're going to find menorahs in their place. And, folks, we know why these Jews are doing it. They're doing it because they can. What's going to stop them? Well, we have to stop them. It's not going to be the Jews who do it. They're the ones who want to rub our noses in the fact that they can affect the criminalization
of our religious holidays and our religious symbols, while at the same time keeping theirs front and center.
Yeah, and Winston, I want to issue this little caveat here. Everything you're saying is spot on, and you're correct in saying that this is the force that is behind the eradication of Christianity and the continued erosion of Christianity. But even as Edgar Steele once said on this program, and as we've said even tonight, there are rules, and to every rule there are exceptions. And it's not every, obviously we're not suggesting that every Jew hates Christ. We've had, you know, Jewish people like Paul Gottfried on this program, but we're talking about the radical Zionists who specifically, is that's who we're talking about, I believe, that, you know, head up organizations like the ADL, and it is just absolutely incontrovertible fact that these are the organizations, and these are almost inevitably always the people who are behind the movements to criminalize freedom of speech and freedom of thought, freedom of expression. They are the people who are always behind the war on Christmas. Winston, you are exactly correct. I just wanted to issue in that little caveat there in case anybody's wondering
okay.
if we're painting with a broad brush here, but continue on if you would.
Fair enough. But, folks, this is not something new. I mean, in Italy, there are more crucifixes than there are stars in the sky. And yet, a few years ago, Jew leaders in Italy started demanding that all crucifixes be taken down because it's offensive to Jews.
And that was just, in fact, last week. I hate to interrupt again, but I was covering this on the show last week. All crucifixes have been forcibly removed from public schools or any sort of place of learning in Italy because they said that Jesus was, quote-unquote, a hate monger. And that was just a story out of Italy last week.
Of all places, Italy, you know, where the Vatican is. Oh, my. And
it goes to show you what kind of influence the Vatican has these days.
Yeah. Well, you know, it wasn't that long ago that you had the Pope kissing Jew butt in order to keep from offending them. But, folks, they're going to keep doing this until we stop them. They're not going to stop themselves. They love doing this. And if you're offended by it, then do something. And it's going to, what can be done about it is going to vary from place to place. But the fact of the matter is, you are going to have to do something. When you, in small town America, have had a nativity scene in the town square for decades and decades, it is not wrong to have it there.
Well,
you have to assert yourself. And for these people to come in and say you can't because it offends them, you need to go on the offensive and say it offends you that they are allowed to say that your religion is such an odious thing that they can't stand it. It offends me when someone slams Christianity, folks.
We'll be back. We got to take a break. I hear our song. Stay tuned, everybody. We'll continue on right after this.
Believe it or not, there's a third hour of tonight's installment of the Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
They call the rise.